talk some pro ball, we are joined by somebody who covers the NBA for the New York Times, the man behind the New York Times NBA newsletter. He went to Cal State Fullerton. He has been recognized as a Big West Conference legend, a friend of the program, the recipient of the 2019 Kurt Gowdy Media Award. He is Mark Stein. Hey, Mark, what's up? How are you?
Romy, I'm good.
Mark, like, what I really want to do is start our conversation by talking Blackberries, and then we could probably spend the entire time talking phones, but I should do the responsible thing and start by talking about the All-Star Game and the All-Star Weekend, so let me do that. When the league first announced, Mark, what they were going to do for the fourth quarter and the new format, what was your initial reaction?
Probably eye-rolling like everybody else. You know, the league has tried a lot of things, innovations of various types. They never seem to achieve the desired effect. So it wasn't just me. I don't think anybody had any grand expectations. Certainly nobody was saying it beforehand. So what we saw in that fourth quarter was completely organic and most welcome. It's the heaviest time that I've ever seen in the league, and this is my 27th season covering it.
Mark Stein joining us. I want to get into that in a moment, but did you ever think that you would see an All-Star game where you would see guys diving for loose balls and taking charges?
It was awesome. I mean, Chris Paul and Lowry, they basically bumped Luka Doncic and Trae Young out of the game on seniority. You know, Doncic and Trae were the starters. Typically in an All-Star game, the guys who get to start get to finish. The young kids were told, sit on the bench over there, and Chris Paul would never come out. Lowry took multiple charges. Don't forget, there was no clock in the fourth quarter. It was an untimed thing. It went for 40 minutes, and we saw very little substituting, and we saw zero load management. Kawhi Leonard pretty much, you know, he said it. He made his first two shots, and from there went all out trying to win the MVP. I mean, none of that was scripted.
Mark Stein's joining us. You have all that, Mark, and then you mentioned that this is about as heavy a time as the league has ever experienced. Using 24 as the target number for the fourth quarter was one of a number of tributes to Kobe and Gigi Bryant over the weekend. How would you describe the feel and the vibe of the entire weekend?
Yeah, I mean, you can't turn a corner or have a conversation, really, without Kobe coming into it in this point, and that's understandable. This has just frankly never happened. A player of his stature, at his age, just a few years out of the game, the manner in which his life was claimed, this is all uncharted territory. And, you know, this is always a celebratory. It's like a convention, really. The game has always been almost, you know, the afterthought. I mean, it's just day after day of events and meetings and basically the whole league coming together. So the whole league comes together just a few weeks after the biggest tragedy it's ever witnessed. And, I mean, you can imagine that Kobe's presence, it's everywhere.
Mark Stein joining us. You know, Mark, I've interviewed a number of different athletes in different sports since that tragedy. It's not just basketball. It's amazing the impact that Kobe had on athletes in every kind of sport. You did a piece recently on Luka, and you talked to him about Kobe Bryant. There's this legendary moment in late December when he was getting ready to inbound the ball, and Kobe started talking trash to him, but he did so in Slovenian. What did Luka share with you about that moment?
Yes, and he says it's going to stay with him for the rest of his life, and you can understand it because, you know, it was the last game Kobe and Gianna attended. They were right there at courtside. Watching Luka was, I think, a big part of the reason why they were there there that night. And, you know, so the story I wrote going into Sunday was kind of, A, exploring the backstory of, you know, it was never really explained how Kobe even learned any Slovenian. And, of course, Saša Vujačić was his longtime former teammate and sparring partner in practice, and those two are really close. And it was actually Sasha who told me that Kobe being Kobe, he would hear Vujicic just uncork these Slovenian and Serbian curse words, and of course Kobe wanted to learn them all and master them, and why'd you use that, and break it all down like he's looking at tape. So it was actually Sasha Vujicic who was his Slovenian tutor. And I mean, Luka was stunned, and You saw the pictures they took after the game, and just I think as much as anything that's happened in his career, that night sticks with him, and he carries that for sure.
We're talking to Mark Stein. I would encourage anybody who has not seen that piece to go find it and read it. It's a great piece. One more thought about that, Mark. He's not going to turn 21 until February 28th. How do you explain the fact that he's doing all the things that he's doing as quickly as he is on this level?
Basically, European basketball is a lot better at the highest level than a lot of people thought. I mean, he was playing in the Real Madrid first team at the age of 16. And by 18, he was leading his little country of 2 million people to a Eurobasket title and then leading Real Madrid to a EuroLeague championship. And those honors don't necessarily resonate among NBA fandom, but that's a really high level. He was playing with men, and he's more NBA-ready than anybody thought. And that includes the Mavs. You know, the Mavericks are not going to sit here and tell you, yes, we knew this guy was going to be as good as he is. He's averaging 29-9-9. Obviously, numbers are somewhat inflated in today's NBA, given the faster pace and more possessions. But 29-9-9 looks good no matter what the circumstances. So, Luka believed he was going to be this kind of force, but to happen this fast, I think a lot of people around the league just underestimated how NBA ready this guy was.
Mark Stein joins us for a few more moments. That's important stuff, Mark. Now, I literally could do an entire interview. I could do a whole hour on this topic. You've got a great piece in your newsletter about NBA executives who still use BlackBerry phones. It's important to note, these are not just hacks that are doing it, or assistants, or interns. These are four of the best executives in the NBA. Masai Ujiri and I have talked about his love of the BlackBerry in the past. Who are the other confirmed members of this extremely elite fraternity?
You got Sam Presti. You have Gerson Rosas, who just made multiple trades, and Daryl Morey, of course, in Houston. And so at least four of the 30 decision makers in the league are still using my favorite phone. I didn't know you were as devoted a fan, so that brings yet another thing that we have in common, which I love to hear.
I still
use mine. I will never, ever give it up. I still write the first draft at least, and sometimes whole stories on it. And, the NBA has its own little small but fiercely loyal community. Throw Derrick Rose in there as a player. Throw Jamal Crawford in there as a player.
Jamal Crawford is great. That does not surprise me at all. Now, when you talk, you have your own reasons, Mark. Maybe they're the same as the executives, but we're talking about high-powered guys into the trade deadline who are doing business on BlackBerries. When you talk to them, what is their argument for still using a BlackBerry?
It's always the keyboard. There is nothing in the smartphone. I don't care what kind of app they put on the phone. I don't care how fancy they get, picture-taking, video, whatever. Nothing can compare or replace the physical keyboard. And, these four executives in particular still feel the same way as I do. And it's interesting. Rosas made four trades in a span of about 40 days. He estimated for me that 35% of the business he conducts is on his BlackBerry. Obviously, there's still a lot of conversation that has to happen phone to phone and human to human, but it's pretty staggering.
There's so much to get to about this too, Mark, before I let you go. But I wonder, how much pressure do these guys feel? How much pressure do you feel when you're the one guy in the group who's got green and your bubbles do not show up?
I feel none. I'm not apologizing ever.
Like, I love it.
I'm not giving up my keyboard. I don't care what scorn is coming my way.
Okay, well, let me ask you this. So, like Masai said, and in fact, there was a point in time when he came on the show and he admitted to me that he had gotten away from the BlackBerry. There's a lot of pressure to switch to a different device. I know some guys have a BlackBerry and they go with another phone. That's not unusual. Do any of these guys have the courage to only go with a BlackBerry?
I'm not 100% sure, but I think Presti may be a BlackBerry only guy, but I really shouldn't even say that because I'm not sure. And look, I got to put my hand up. I'm talking to you right now on an iPhone. I have an iPhone as my second phone. Obviously, iPhones are amazing and they do lots of things that a BlackBerry can't. And you need all those things in your life. But if I had to go down to one right now, I would have to throw this iPhone in the trash, and I can't not have a BlackBerry.
Hey Mark, which BlackBerry? The Key 1, or which one are you using?
Yeah, I'm using the Key 2, which is the newest one. And
right.
Kind of the whole reason I wrote about this was because right before the trade deadline came an announcement that BlackBerry phones, which since 2016 have been made in China, BlackBerry has stopped making phones itself. BlackBerry announced right before the deadline that's going away too. So as of August, there will be nobody making BlackBerry phones. So what's amusing about these NBA executives, and the Rockets really kind of started this, they keep a stash of backup devices because they're going extinct, man. It's sad. They're going extinct.
You know, I would say to you that I'd be freaking out if I knew that they were not going to make the device, the hardware anymore, and then you dropped your phone. Like, you can go on eBay. There's a million BlackBerries. You can always find them. But that would be a concern, right? Like, all of a sudden, they're not going to be in production anymore. Then what do these guys do?
Well, true BlackBerry insiders, like, you know, I wouldn't call myself a super expert on this part of it, but people still hold out hope that someone will come in with a new licensing agreement to find somebody in China or another country to keep manufacturing them. So I think all we can do is, if you love this phone, cross your fingers and hope it happens.
Mark, one last thought. The thing that I thought, and I kind of got beyond it, I was one of those guys who was addicted to the CrackBerry. I thought that what I would never get over was that physical keyboard. I did. The thing I really struggled with, the detox, was the indicator light. The flashing red indicator light. I didn't think there was any way I could live without that. And I also thought there was no way to live without the BBMs. All three things were really important. But somehow, man, if you fight that addiction, you can get over it. There is a way. I love the phone. I love what it represents. But I can't lie to you. I'm not using one right now.
No, you got to go back and get one. You should do middle of the night, something pops in your head for your show rundown. You just bang it into your phone. You need it, man. You need it,
man.
It's like a comedian who thinks of a joke in the middle of the night. What if you have to write 10 paragraphs in the middle of the night? You don't want to do that on an iPhone.
Do you get up and write 10 paragraphs in the middle of the night?
I'm a.
You're a writer.
I've got issues.
You're a Kurt Gowdy Media Award recipient. Maybe you do. Okay, I'll tell you what. If I get the Key 1, I've already done some research on this, Mark, and it's going to cost. If I do get the Key 1, I'm going to get the red version. The red's badass.
Expensive.
It's really expensive. I agree.
Stick it to the network. Show cost.
Yeah, they're not paying for it. They will not do that. Mark Stein covers the NBA for the New York Times. And you would not know about this if you did not see his NBA newsletter. The man behind the New York Times NBA newsletter. Fight the good fight. Mark, nice job. Great to have you back.
Always good to be with you, pal.
You too, man. Have a great day. I love it. Yeah, and that, I think about it a lot. I sometimes go back and forth. The last athlete that I saw in person with a BlackBerry. The last athlete that I saw in person holding onto a BlackBerry at the valet stand at a hotel waiting for his car was none other than Martellus Bennett. Martellus Bennett had a silver passport BlackBerry. And, you know, if I didn't know Martellus Bennett and I didn't have a job to do, I would have said, dude, can I have your autograph? And not because you're an NFLer, but because you're still using a BlackBerry. And not a BlackBerry, but that funky passport BlackBerry. That was a really funky device. It looks like a passport. And the thinking was, yeah, you know, you just carry your passport around, like your phone too. Bad idea. Bad design, bad form factor. But my man was not giving it up. And one more thought, I know I'm really heavy. That whole thing about I can't live without the keyboard. Once you live without that keyboard, try to go back to that keyboard. It's the weirdest thing ever. People are like, oh, I can type so much faster on the keyboard. Not if you don't have it, you can't. If you have an iPhone right now, go find a BlackBerry and try and type on one of those keyboards. It's impossible. That said, I do get nostalgic. I do get reminiscent. Mark Stein's got me fired up. I might do it. When we come back, I will open it up to you. Is there anybody listening right now that still rocks a BlackBerry? Is there anybody who emails this show with a BlackBerry?